ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
We are in chapter 7. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Maya Sakta Manapata Yogam Nunjan Madashaya Asamshayam Samagram Mam Yata Vyasa Sitachinu The Supreme Personality of God has said, Now hear, O son of Prita, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So here, chapter 7, Krishna continues speaking to Arjuna. He just hinted and concluded, he declared, in the end of the sixth chapter, Yoginam api sarvesham madgate inantaratmana shabhavam bhajate yumam same yuktatamo mataha that the best of all yogis, whatever he described, karma yogi, jnana yogi, dhyana yogi, Krishna says the best one is madgatena, means abiding in me, or always thinking of me. Antahatmana, within himself. So it speaks about his consciousness, no? Shraddha, full faith, Shraddha. Now this is qualified here. Bhajate, render loving transcendental service. That's Prabhupada explained, remember that word bhajate. It's worship only for the Supreme, not for devatas, not for any other man, no? Man, to me, Supreme Lord. By me, considered Mataha, Yuktatama, the greatest yogi. So now, here, the link is that Arjuna may wonder, okay, how do we become such a yogi? How to we come to that standard that we always, Matkadena Antaratmana, that we always abide in Krishna, that we always absorb in Krishna, how to become such a yogi? That could be linked to the seventh chapter that Krishna speaks. By hearing about me, you will practice yoga in full consciousness, mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. So, this could be the link to the chapters, no? That how can one become such a Krishna conscious person describing Yoginam api sarvesham. Krishna explains how to come to that, how to get that knowledge, how to come to that quality of absorption. Another link, Sridhar Swami said, that Krishna says, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenant. He abides in me, he has faith in me, he worships me. So, Sridhar Swami says, of what nature are you to whom worship is made? What is your nature? What are your transcendental qualities? What is your spiritual position? What is the nature of your Swarupa? What is the nature of your activities, pastimes? Basically, Sridhar Swami says this because chapter 7 is called Knowledge of the Absolute. Krishna reveals knowledge about that worshipful form of a yogi. So that's also explained here as a link. And that makes very much sense because this is a powerful chapter 7 where Krishna focuses more on bhakti, surrender to him, and declares more. Again and again, that He is Supreme, Source of everything, Cause of everything, Sustainer of everything, Essence of everything. And then He declares who surrenders, who doesn't surrender, like that, all these different things are described here. So it's called Vijnana Yoga, Knowledge of the Absolute. Here. So here, right from the beginning, Krishna says, Prabhupada explains, 7th chapter, the nature of Krishna consciousness fully described. Krishna's fully known opulences and how he manifests such opulences is described here. Now in first six chapters, usually we dealt with karma yoga or activities which will deliver one, which are offered to the Lord. And now in the middle sixth chapter, the subject is bhakti yoga. And that all acharyas, they said that. Sridhar Swami, Ramanuja Acharya, Vishwanchakravarti, Baladev, everybody follows that. So Prabhupada follows that also. In the first sixth chapter, he has described also as a spirit soul. And this is what Sridhar Swami says. The first sixth chapter describes jivas, and the second sixth, Bhagavan, Ishwar. So that's also hinted here. That's also true. Prabhupada said that in purport of text 1, concentration of the mind upon Krishna, Supreme, is made possible by prescribed devotion service in 9 different forms, of which Shravanam is the first and most important. So we are hearing of this 9 process of devotion service. The Shravanam is foundation of everything, is the heart of everything. Though the process Yuga Dharma is Kirtan, unless the Shravan is proper, hearing is proper, one will not understand how to do Shudanam, what is Shuddha Bhakti, or what is the proper attitude, how to get free from sin. One must hear. So here the essence of this shloka is Tachrinu, you hear now from me. By hearing, Prabhupada continues. Arjun, therefore, Lord says to Arjun, Tachrinu, hear from me. No one can be greater authority than Krishna. And therefore, by hearing from him, one receives the greatest opportunity to become perfectly Krishna conscious person. One has therefore to learn from Krishna directly or from a pure devotee of Krishna, and not from a non-devotee upstart, puffed up with academic education. So here, the hearing, but not hearing from anybody, is clarified again. Prabhupada says, you have to hear who is perfect, Krishna. And we already discussed Guru Parampara. That's also perfect knowledge. Because nothing is added, nothing is extracted, nothing is changed as it is. So again, Prabhupada quotes a famous phrase, Shrimata Sagata Krishna Punya Shavana Kirtana Hridayanta Stokhya Bhadrani Vidmoti Sukhrisatam Nashta Praesho Bhadra Shivlagrat. So what is it? It's the glory of hearing. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literature or to hear from him directly through Bhagavad Gita, it's itself righteous activity. Shinvata Sakata Krishna, Punya Shavana Kirtana. There is no better Punya, there is no better pious activities, purificatory activity, beneficial activity than Shavanam Kirtana. Nothing better than that, this is what Shloka says. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling in everyone's heart, acts as a best wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing of him. In this way, devotee naturally develops his dormant transcendental knowledge. As he hears more about Krishna from Bhagavatam and from devotees, he becomes fixed in devotional service. By developing devotional service, he becomes free from all the passion, ignorance, and thus material lust aversa diminish. When these impurities are wiped out, the candidates remain steady in position of pure goodness, become enlivened by devotional service, and understand the science of God's potency. Thus, bhakti yoga severs the heart knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of asam shayam samagram, understanding of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada summarized this gradual process of hearing, clarifying doubts, getting proper understanding, getting free from the disturbances of Maya, and actually developing affection for the Supreme. Prabhupada said, therefore, only by hearing from Krishna or from his devotee in Krishna consciousness can one understand the science of Krishna. So this is the conclusion here. And Prabhupada set up this movement on this basis, that our sadhana program is based on hearing and chanting. We have Mangalarti in the morning, we are doing Kirtana, Japa, Kirtan, and also Shravan, we are supposed to hear the whole night. And then we have Bhagavatam class, evening we have Gita class, Prabhupada set up the morning Bhagavad evening Gita class, should be there. And the aratis are there, between services there. But everything is focused around the hearing. Because when we hear from devotees, when we hear from Prabhupada's books, the effect is there. Our heart gets purified, we get convinced, we get the faith, we get focused, we get inspired, we get purified. So it's a process of purification, and hearing is most powerful. Shravan is heart of a kirtan, that's the declaration. So Krishna goes on glorifying this knowledge. Gyanam teham savi gyanam idam vakshyame sheshata yad gyatva neha buyonaj gyatavyam avasishyate. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. So again, Prabhupada gives the definition of knowledge, which we already heard in the second chapter. No? That complete knowledge includes knowledge of phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and source of both of them. Who remembers definition knowledge from second chapter? Knowledge means to know matter, spirit, and controller of both. Same thing is repeated. No? Prabhupada said, this is transcendental knowledge. So, here, the point is that once you get this, once you know Krishna, Krishna says, you can know me by hearing about me, and that will fix you up fully in me, and your mind will be attached to me. Once you know me, Krishna says, nothing further shall remain for you to know. You know, we have a difference from Bible when Jesus says that disciple asks, tell us more. I say, I have so much to tell you, but you have no ears to hear. Means you're not qualified. You're not on that level. No? But Krishna says here, once I tell you, nothing else for you to hear. That's it. Finish. End of the knowledge. No? And then Krishna says in next shloka, how rare is this? Of course, here Prabhupada quotes in shloka 2, the Mundaka Upanishad, explaining that when the cause of all causes become known, then everything knowable becomes known and nothing remains unknown. You know, this is to defeat this foolish speculators' ideas that God is unknown. So we have to search for unknown. We met one fellow here in Salem, speculator, maha speculator, he got a golden medal in mental speculation. We show him the books, Bhagavatam, and he said, no, this is written knowledge, so this is known, but we are looking for unknown. So we told him, look, have you read the book? No. So for you it is unknown. So you read, then it will be known. But when it becomes known, it's not anymore unknown. So what do you search for? So, but the point is that you are searching for unknown, and once this is known, that's the end of knowledge. Veda anta, no more search. You have to find, not going to go on searching forever, no? No? What's the point? You're going to search forever. You lost your keys, and you're looking for them. And then I told you, okay, keys are there, find them. If I find them, then I have to stop searching. What a foolishness. Why? Because they are attached to mental speculation. They like to speculate, no? Scientists are complaining. And proposal came. Why don't you scientists, why don't you search for God? I said, that immediately stops all our scientific progress. And why? Why search for God stops scientific? Because as soon as you say God, means creator, means immediately answers to all our questions of creation. And then, what we are going to do? It's no more inspiration to find out what is the cause, because you tell us the cause. So we don't want God, so we can go on speculating forever, basically. This is amazing objection. They're very offensive, they're very offensive. They say, as soon as you say God, it stops all intellectual growth. Because you don't have to endeavor how this world is created. You got the answer. God created. But nothing else to know. It's a speculators that, you know. So this is what Upanishad says. Once you know God, everything becomes known. Nothing else is unknown. No? So that makes sense. No? And Krishna says in Shloka 3, how rare is this? How rare is this knowledge? How rare is a person who gets this knowledge, who knows Krishna? No? Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschimam vetti tattvataha. Out of many thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. And of those who have achieved perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So here, generally, Prabhupada said, mankind is simply engaged in animal propensities, namely eating, sleeping, defending and mating. And hardly anyone is interested in transcendental knowledge. And who is interested? Prabhupada goes on in purport explaining that this knowledge is very difficult for non-devotees. It's very difficult for non-devotees to know Krishna. For karmis, it's difficult to know him because they are bewildered by material desires. Impersonalists, they want to see him without qualities, without form. They cannot know him also. Yogis, they don't know him fully. They don't know also that one should render service to the Lord and they are spiritual varieties there. And the demigods also, they don't know him, being bewildered by their position and their small world where they think, I am the issuer, I am the controller, I am the protector, I am the chief of the planets. This is all explained in Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada concludes, therefore, unless one practices devotional service to the Lord, one cannot know Krishna as he is, tattvada, even though one is great scholar or philosopher. So you can see that for karmis, impersonalists, jnanis, yogis, demigods, it's difficult to know Krishna. Unless one is devotee, one cannot know. Everybody got bewildered, no? We know so many stories of devatas being bewildered, no? Indra got bewildered, Brahma got bewildered. Agni, Vayu, they got bewildered. So many devatas, they completely bewildered. Even Shaktyavesha avataras, like Parashuram, he got bewildered when he saw Ram. That, oh, this is another king, another prince, Kshatriya. Bewildered, they're bewildered. So, Prabhupada hints here that in Shloka 3 purport, Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, the cause of all causes, Pramila Lord Govinda, Ishvara Paramakrishna. And that's the idea that it's very difficult to know him. They may go on speculating. But here Prabhupada quotes Bhaktira Samarasindhu Shruti Smriti Purana Di Pancharata Vidim Vinam Haikanti Ki Harir Bhaktir Utpat Taiva Kalpate. Devotional service of the Lord that ignores the authorized Vedic literature, like Upanishads, Puranas, Pancharatras, is simply an unnecessary disturbance in society. So, this is the point, that people, even if they are pandits, even if they know Shastras, they go bringing their own conclusion. Means they do not know Shastras. They study, but they do not know. Or they just go on giving their own conclusions, speculations, without referring to Shastras. And they will never understand. They will never understand. This is amazing. You come to this people who are studying Vedic literatures as a profession, Indologists or different Sanskrit scholars. And this is an incredible amount of energy and intelligence they invested. They're so, you know, there was a Rasaraj Prabhu told us in USA, he went for some scholars meeting. And there is an American professor quoting Divya Prabandhas in pure Tamil, just pronunciation, just perfect. He was so amazed. Wow. Yeah? And, you know, he knows so much. I think he knows more than all of us about Alvarez, about Ramanuja Acharya, everything, you know? And in the break time after the meeting was over, Rasaraj Prabhu said, let me meet him, let me speak to him. You know? And then, you know, he understood. He knows all this knowledge. He wrote a book about it. He speaks about it. But he's completely meat-eater, smoking, drinking. Nothing to do with his life. It doesn't apply any of this. It doesn't strike in any of this point that Narayana is supreme. And he speaks. oh, and this relationship with Lord and the devotion, and these are all devotees, this is not like this dry Vedantist. And he glorifies Bhakti like anything in his speech, you know. But he doesn't practice any of this. It's amazing, no? They all this knowledge did not purify them. How it's possible? Because they did not hear from the proper source. That Srinu, neither from Krishna, neither from the devotee parampara. And what is the result? Mantra step, Nishfala Madaha, all that knowledge did not purify them. Did not purify them. You get some benefit, little here and there, chanting Narayana's names, glorifying the devotees. But really, in heart, he doesn't accept Narayana himself. He's atheist. This is amazing. There's another scholar who is Krishna Kshetra Prabhu told us when he was here, who is world authority on Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta and Lord Chaitanya. Yeah. And another karmi, nonsense, bogus fellow, you know. Just karmi, just materialistic person, full of material desires, full of contamination, sinful person. You know? But he knows so much about Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, and he did some basic mistakes also. Cannot know like a devotee. So Krishna Kshetra Prabhu wrote a few articles and published some works and this and that, had speeches. Now he became almost number two in the world. So now when students are studying something, students of PhD, they have to quote authority. So Krishna Kshetra Prabhu told him, he was surprised that somebody asked him, why don't you write for new Oxford Encyclopedia articles about deity worship, about you know, what is the deity and the archana and everything, and write about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he said, oh, you're asking me from the Oxford Encyclopedia publishers, why don't you ask that person who is in charge for the world? Oh, he's very busy, and we understood that you are the second one. He is now as a scholar acting, no? So Krishna Kshetra Prabhu told him, you see, Krishna gave me opportunity that we can now become authorities. We are devotees, and we can become authorities among the scholars in our own field. Then we can explain properly, you know. For example, that big authority, big scholar on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wrote in the book that commentaries on Chaitanya Charitamrita written by two people. One is Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and another one is Bimala Prasad. Just see, fool number one, he doesn't know this is the same person. You know, this is the biggest pandit authority of Lord Chaitanya, you know. So who can know? Who can know Krishna? Devotee can know Krishna. Devotee can present properly, you know. Even if they present siddhantically correct view, they will give paka definition of Chintya Beda Beda Tattva. They'll compare it to Shuddhadvaita, Dvaita Dvaita, Vishishta Dvaita, Dvaita Vada. They'll compare it, they'll explain everything. And after that they'll have cigarette and a little whiskey to cool down, but refresh the throat from such a endeavoring speech. Yeah. But for us, Krishna's words are life and soul. For them are another means of enjoyment. They enjoy speculating, they enjoy philosophy, and then they become famous, they earn money, they are motivated. They use Krishna's own philosophy, they use devotees and deities for their own sense gratification. So what is it? Just disturbance in society. Whatever they write, whatever, nothing, doesn't benefit anybody. You know? So, we should not get bewildered learning from them. You got nothing to learn from them. The old material sound. Even if they speak about Krishna, it's material sound. Even if they chant his name, it remains material sound. Unless one is dedicated, sacrifice his life for Krishna's pleasure, the Nama will not appear. The Katha will not go from his mouth. It's all material. So, this is the first partition, knowing Krishna fully by hearing from him. Krishna sets up. Now he starts speaking knowledge about Krishna. So now we go to the section where Krishna says that I am the cause of all causes. Krishna starts speaking. Bhumi apo nalovayo kham manobuddhi evacha ahankara iti yame bhinna prakriti ashtada. Now, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, force, ego, all together, these eight constitute my separate material energies. Now, Krishna is cause of them. These are my energies, he declares. And these eight constitute they are source of 24 elements. They are source of all that is materially in existence. So we know that these 24 elements, from these five subtle elements, earth, water, fire, and ether, and mind, intelligence, and ego, subtle matter. Five pancha mahabhutas, gross ones, and three are subtle, but both are matter. Mind, intelligence, ego, this is also matter. Why? Because it's changing. It's a subtle matter, but it's material. And this also is to be given up in time of death, in time of moksha, time of leaving the material world. So, both are material. Soul is not material. Soul is spiritual. Soul is beyond this. So here, I just list a little bit of this. Prabhupada writes in purport like that, that from eight separate energies of the Lord are manifested 24 elements of the material world. So it goes like this, earth, water, fire, air, ether, these are five. Six, false ego. Seven, intelligence. Eight is unmanifest stage of three modes of material nature, pradana, that is the subtle material elements. Nine, acquiring knowledge, senses, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin. Then working senses, five, voice, legs, hands, anus, and genitals. And then the mind, and then again objects of the senses, five objects, smell, taste, form, touch, and sound. So this comes 24. No? We already discussed this, nothing new. Let us not. This is Sankhya. Sankhya, people analyze this 24. No? There is working senses, knowledge acquiring senses, object of the senses, and the elements itself from which all these are made. And there is subtle matter behind it. Pradhana being source of all matter. So Prabhupada writes here that material nature is called Prakriti, or the energy of the Lord, in his different Purusha incarnations as described. So Vishnu Stutrini Rupani, here from the Narada, this is actually Satvata Tantra, this is from Narada Pancharatras, that Vishnu assumes, Krishna assumes three forms, three Purusha avatars. Mahavishnu, who glances upon Pradhana and turns it into Mahatattva. From the pores of the skin of his body, millions of universes are generated. Millions are coming out, like the golden eggs. They come into Pradhana and they get enveloped by this material elements, earth, water, fire, and they become enlarged in size. So then, when Pradhana is glanced upon the, when Lord glances upon Pradhana, she becomes Mahatattva, she becomes active. She immediately starts assembling the elements. So, then Lord enters into his second expansion, Garbhodakasya Vishnu, into each universe, fills it with water and does the, creates the Brahma, and then Brahma does the secondary creation. And then again, he enters into hearts of everyone and into every atom as a Kshirodakasya Vishnu, as a Paramatma of all living entities. So these three Vishnus, they maintain, they create, they maintain, and also on the end, all the material creations again withdraw in the body of Mahavishnu. So these Purusha avataras, these are the Lord's forms which deal with material creation, maintenance and destruction. Everything to do with matter goes to these three Purusha avataras. So Krishna is also those. These are his expansions. So here, generally one who does not know the science of God assumes that this material world is for the enjoyment of living entities, and that the living entities are the Purushas, the causes, controllers, and enjoyers of material energy. No. And this is today modern people's vision of the material world. We should exploit, we should explore, we should take advantage of matter. We are the controllers, we'll conquer the nature. No, we'll put the wall and stop tsunamis. No, we'll blow the rockets on the clouds and get the rain whenever we want. Yeah, they have a little problem controlling wind, you know. In America, there's disaster of these winds, tornadoes, and all kinds of hurricanes. You know. They have a little problem with that. No, no wonder. Arjun said, I could control wind, can't control mind. So can you imagine how much problem with mind they have when they can't control even wind? So, these are, you know, the thoughts that we are enjoyers and this is meant for us. Whether God has given us, there are religions who claim God has given us this world to enjoy. And there are Kalmins, atheists who say, we don't accept God given us, but it's meant for enjoyment. They agree on that point, no? So, doesn't make sense, no? If God has given us this material world to enjoy, if God is God, all-powerful, almighty, living being, why he didn't do a little better job, no? Why so many problems in this world? Why sufferings? Why death? Why pain, no? Should make some mosquito when he bites you that you feel ecstasy, you know, something like that. You know. He could make, he has the power. No? But no, when he bites you get malaria. So you see this world, if you thought for a little bit, one can realize that this world is not meant for enjoyment. Most of enjoyment, 99%, 99.9% or all enjoyment, is just in the mind. Just in the mind. Yeah? We remember, I'm born, in this lifetime, I'm born on the coastal area, on the sea. So, on the beaches are there, and every day as a children will go and bath. Whenever it's good weather, we'll just go and swim and swim and swim. And when summer comes, so many people from North Europe, Germans and whatever, Danish people, and all these people from North, they don't have the sea in their country, they'll come and they're so excited, see, we are on the sea, we'll go to swim. And we are all kids watching, what happened to them? see, Papa, you know, they are so much excited. Because we are seeing daily, for us was nothing special. But for them was so excited. No? But sea is the same. Not that for them sea is some pink and different color and more beautiful, exciting. It's the same thing. But the mindset is different. No? It's all pleasure in the mind, you know. For them it's mind pleasure. Then they come on the sea, oh well, no, they're all white complexion, very much white, because they are not, you know, their climate doesn't allow them to wear short sleeves or something, you know. So when they come to the sea, they're completely white and they want to get darker, that's their desire, you know. They have to show to others they came to the sea, so this little darker complexion should come. You see, in India, opposite, in India, white complexion is more better than, you know, everybody wants to be white, they put so much of the talc to look white, they look like ghosts sometimes. You see, but there in the West, you should become darker complexion. You see, it's all mind, you know. For Indians, mind is set, white is better, and in West, dark is better. They are joking, you are white like a cheese, like paneer. It means it's criticizing you, that you are not swimming, you are not going on the sun. So they go white like a cheese. They stand on the sun to get darker complexion and they burn like anything. They become red. They all night they put cold yogurt all over the body to cool them and they put some creams and then next 7 days they cannot go on the sun. They can't swim. They can't do anything. We came all the way. Now we... But in spite of all sufferings, what happens when they come back home, when anybody asks, how was your holidays? Oh, we were enjoyers. They can't admit that it was a suffering, another suffering, you know. Suhotra Maharaj, famous analogy, you know. They come and get fried on the sun to become dark, like stool pakoras. This is what he said. And he's right, you know, this material body is just like a stool. Material elements. What's the difference? My body become darker or whiter? What the difference makes, you know? Just mind pleasure. Just in the mind, some concept of we will enjoy, you know. So, this is the demoniac, atheistic view that this material world is meant for our enjoyment. You know? So Krishna explained, I am the source, I created, I sustain it, I maintain it, I destroy it. Everything fully under his control, this eight elements, which include all other 24 total. So then he says, Aparayam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param jiva bhuta mahabhaho yayedam dharyate jagat. Besides this, almighty Arjuna, there is another superior energy of mind, which comprises the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material inferior nature. Now here Krishna says, not only I am master of the material energy, aparayam, it is prakriti vidime param, there is para prakriti, the spiritual nature, better energy, that is jiva, living entity. I am their master also. What they are doing? They are, jivas are exploiting this inferior. No? So here, text 5. The cosmic manifestation has no power to act unless it's moved by superior energy, the living entity. Now this is interesting. In matter, matter cannot move on its own. Matter has no power, ability to move on its own unless superior energy moves, just like this mic. No? I move it as I like. No? Then it works. When soul comes into the body, body grows. If soul is not a body won't grow. So, just like a body won't grow if soul is not there, similarly, all universe cannot be created unless super soul enters into it. Super soul is the soul of all universe, and our jiva atma, anuhatma, is the soul of the universal body of mind. Of this, our own body, not universe. So, this is explained here. Now, what is the problem? That Krishna declares here, the living entities are always controlled by the Lord. They have no independent existence. Although they are superior energy, still they are under control of Lord. Still they are energy. They are not energetic. Shakti, Shaktimato. No? So Shakti and Shaktiman, that's the philosophy. And here, Prabhupada quotes distinction between living entity and Lord in Srimad Bhagavatam. No? This is a quoted here. O Supreme Eternal, if the embodied living entities were eternal and all-pervading like you, then they would be not under your control. But if the living entities accepted as minor energies of your lordship, then they are at once subject to your supreme control. Therefore, real liberation entails surrender by the living entity to your control, and that surrender will make them happy. In that constitutional position only they can be controllers. Therefore, and Prabhupada goes on, therefore men with limited knowledge who advocate the monistic theory that God and living entities are equal in all respects are actually guided by faulty and polluted opinion. This is Bhagavatam shloka. What is interesting here that jiva is always controlled by the Lord, always controlled. But still there is that minute independence. So how is that? If we are just like a robot, acting whatever Lord says, and then why then karma is there? Why we have reactions? Why do we suffer? No? No. We have always choice according to our desires. But we have our limited field of action. Just like you are in the aeroplane traveling, you can move from one seat to another, but you can't come down, you cannot come out of it till the journey is over. So jiva has limited space of movements. Within control of the Lord, jiva has his own choice. But jiva has no capacity to do anything without Lord's giving equipment. The Lord has given the body, he has given the mind, he has given the senses, he has given objects of the senses, he has given the process of enjoyment, he has given process of contemplation, process of satisfaction, and everything fully, entirely, we depend on the Lord. That's the point. So the foolishness of jiva is think, I'm independent controller, I'm independent enjoyer. But here, it's interesting, when living entity surrenders, in that constitutional position only they can be controllers. How is this? How jiva can be controller when they surrender? How to understand this? Jiva is not controller,
Jiva is controlled.
So when one surrenders, two things. You can see from different angles this statement, how jiva becomes controller after surrendering, after liberation. One thing is that Krishna voluntarily put himself under control of his devotees, because they have no selfish motives, they have not misused him or his creation. Krishna voluntarily becomes controlled by his devotees. Control, not in the sense like we say this word control, we don't like, nobody likes to hear control. No? Leave me alone, why you want to control? Because when you say control, we find some restriction, some restricted movements, some restricted, we are restricted in our desires. But here, when jiva is pure, Krishna says, okay, now you are in control. So Lord may put jiva to be in charge for universes or anything. Become in charge for different universal affairs. You can become leader in many ways, controller. What are the devatas? They're all controllers. They're all controllers. So, well, of course, there's one problem with devatas. We understand they may not be liberated souls. They have this desire to control. But they worship the Lord. They are devotees, suras. They're not asuras, they're suras. They're a little motivated materially. But jiva is really controller. When he's liberated, what he is a controller of? He's also a controller of his own destiny or his own desires. He's controlled by the maya when he's conditioned. And then he's under control of yoga maya, of Krishna. So control of yoga maya is it's something like almost you're not controlled in that sense. It is a positive purpose fulfilled by being under control of yoga maya. It's giving pleasure to the Lord. So in that sense, you may say, I'm liberated. When one is controlled under the yoga maya, then he is considered liberated. Mahatmanasman partha, daivim prakriti mashita. The mahatmas, they are liberated. Why? Because they are under control of yoga maya. Because this yoga maya controls jivas in the sense that facilitates jivas service to the Lord. So that's another thing to understand, that this is not controlling Mahamaya. Mahamaya, we are forced to take birth, we are forced to die, we are forced to suffer, to get reactions. We have no choice. That's heavy control, Mahamaya. You know? Yoga Maya is, it's a facility, energy which facilitates service to the Lord. So, in that sense, devotee is not bound by it. It's something to think about these controllers. Now here, Krishna says, while exploiting gross and subtle inferior energy, matter, the superior energy, living entity, forgets his real spiritual mind and intelligence. This forgetfulness is due to influence of matter upon living entity. So now jivas who want to control, who want to exploit, they are controlled. They are under control. You want to control matter, you become under control of the matter. This is what has happened. Therefore, one may conclude that Gita confirms living entity to be only one of the multi-energies of Krishna. And when this energy is free from material contamination, he becomes fully Krishna conscious or liberated. So here, living entity is Prakriti called. It's not called Purusha in this shloka. Prakriti Param is energy of the Lord. So therefore it is under control of the Lord. My energy, my nature, under my control. Maya Dakshina Prakriti, even material energy is under his control, even jiva is under his control, both. So in text 6, Krishna says, whatever I told you so far, no? All created beings have their own source in these two natures. Of all that is material and all that is spiritual in this world, know for certain that I am both the origin and dissolution. So here, Krishna declares, no, that he is the origin and dissolution of all energies. Spirit is the basic field of creation, And matter is created by spirit. Krishna created everything. Everything is under him. Whether material or spiritual, everything is under my control. I maintain everything, sustain everything. I'm origin, I'm dissolution. This is what Krishna says here. Now the modern scientists, they can't get this simple fact that spirit created matter. All the time they think matter creates life. Matter is life. Life is material. Life is combination of material elements. The moving matter, the self, what is it called? Self-reproducing matter. What is life? How you define life? Self. Self-reproducing matter. Nonsense. Self-reproducing matter, no? Spirit-created matter. No? Can you give an example of living entity creates matter? Lemon tree, Prabhupada, giving life comes from life. No. You see, living entity, one lemon tree creates so much of citric acid chemicals. And we are sweating, we are creating chemicals, Prabhupada says. No? Like that. When nail is growing, you cut the nail, it's just chemical. No? But it grows from live body. When soul is not there, can the nail grow? Cannot. Usually they don't grow. If they grow, something wrong. So that's the idea, that from spirit, from life, matter comes. And this we preach regularly, this is basic thing. We are not just body, we are spirit soul, but then you explain this, you know, that spirit is actually who creates matter. And then to make clear this point, to establish it fully, this point that Krishna is both origin and dissolution, he gives this analogy in Shloka Sai. Matav parataram nanya kinchitas tu dananjaya mai sarvam idam proktam sutre maniganaiva. Conquer of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on the thread. So this is what Krishna declares here. I am supreme and no energy superior to me. Nothing. No energy, no energy. Kinchitast, nasti. Nothing above me. No? Paratara. I am supreme. Mata, beyond me, paratara, superior. Na. Anyat, kinchit. Nothing else above me. So Krishna speaks to Arjuna. Nobody is above me. This is very essential shloka. This is one of the 10 most important shlokas to remember. Of course, in this 7th chapter, many shlokas are there. I didn't tell which one to memorize. On the end, we can. Is any shloka not to be memorized in 7th chapter? Difficult to tell. But this is essential. This shloka established Krishna is supreme. Matav parataram nanyat kinchitas titanajaya. And then he gives analogy how he sustains everything, how he maintains everything, how he is substance of everything. Everything rests on him. Without him, everything will collapse. See my Kanti Mala here, you see? You see this Tulsi Malaya around the neck? Can you see the thread? You can't see. But without thread, what will happen? Collapse. Same thing. Krishna is the thread. Sutre Mani Ganaiva. Just like thread. All pearls are strung on the thread. He says, everything that exists, I support, is strung on him. Everything. Material or spiritual. Whatever it is. Mai saramidam prottam sutre maniganaiva. Just give that analogy of a pearl necklace. So this is appropriate. This is the declaration. Krishna declares here. What is that form of yours that one madhkadena antaratmana one should fix, meditate on, dedicate, shadavan, bhajate and serve? Yes, this is the one. It's the cause of all causes. Absolute truth. Supreme Lord. Nobody. Therefore you worship, therefore you surrender, therefore you share faith. Everything rests on me. So this is declared here, this is very important shloka. Prabhupada immediately, as all acharyas, take opportunity to establish a personal feature of the Absolute Truth. Prabhupada writes, no, common controversy, whether the Supreme Absolute Truth is personal or impersonal. As far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, Absolute Truth is personality of Godhead Sri Krishna. And this is conforming in every step. In this verse, particularly, it is stressed that Absolute Truth is person. But Sunati Yogodka also absolutely showed this affirmation, Brahma, Ishwara Parama Krishna Sachirangi. Krishna stands in front of Arjuna and tells, nobody above me, no truth above me, Parataram, nothing exists above me, nothing. Nasti, Kinchidasti, nothing. So, Prabhupada said, Krishna stands in front of Arjuna and he says, nobody is above me. Why is it Krishna is manifestation, unmanifested Brahman and this and that? That means Brahman would be above Krishna. But if you say nothing, kinchidas, nothing, kinchid means this much, not even this much, nothing, does not exist, nothing, anything else, kinchid, and nothing, nasty. So that is the point here, that Krishna is supreme. So now, problem is that Upanishads, they get information about Lord Arupam. And this is where all the impersonalists get stuck. Arupam, Niraka, Nirguna, Avyakta. That's the ultimate. No, how can be form ultimate? No. And then again, here is explained that Arupam, it is not impersonal. It indicates the transcendental form of Satchitananda, eternally bliss and knowledge. And then here, for that, Shweta Shvetara Upanishad is quoted. It's not that Arupa means no form, but means no material form. No? So, why? Because same Upanishad describes also, Satchitananda Rupaya Krishnaya Klishta Karina Namo Vedanta Vedaya Gurave Guri Sakshini. Again, same Upanishad describes, there is a Satchitananda Rupaya. Is it material? No, it's not. It's Achitananda. How can it be material? Asat Achit Niranand is opposite. But here is Achitananda Rupa. So what do you do? One Upanishad say Arupa, one Upanishad say Rupa. So one must understand. Rupa means spiritual form. Arupa means it's not material form. No? Just like I say, Radhanand here has no pants, no shirt. So one may misunderstand. Oops, we came on class without pants, without shirt, naked. He's not naked, he has dhoti and kurta. No? So Arupa means no pants and shirt. Not pants. But what he has dhoti and kurta. No? Not that he is naked. No? And he's not dressed. So same thing, when Veda says Arupa means not material form. Because Jiva always compare Atmanam Manate Jagat, whatever our experience we try to understand. I have a form. God also has a form. Oh, as soon as I told one boy in the train, God has form. Oh, he has to also go on toilet. That's first question he asked when he heard God has a form. Jiva is so dull and this is first thing they could relate. As I go to toilet, Krishna also goes to toilet. And I said, yes, but he has fragrant smell about it. No, Rishabhadev, remember? When he passed, everything was like a sandalpav, like a best jasmine flower. You know, this is absolute. Could not understand. Therefore, Upanishad has no form, no form, no, not like you think form, not like you think qualities, not like you think your concept, your understanding of his existence, not like that. So first negation, is not material, it's not like you think, it's not like, then what is it? Then positive aspect is given. So people get confused, the impersonalists get confused. The Lord has a form. Prabhupada defeated so many places. This Lord has a form. Lord is source of everything. Janmadhyasayataha. If he has no form, how can be he source of all other forms? If I have form and God has no form, means I have something God doesn't have. God doesn't have a form. I have a form, so I'm superior. Because I have something God doesn't have. Doesn't make sense. No? We will see Prabhupada later on purpose writes. Man is created on picture of God, as the Bible says, no? We have form, because God has a form. No? Otherwise, how will we get form? So this is all discussed here. So Shweta Shvetara Upanishad is quote. I know that Supreme Person, Personality of Godhead, who is transcendental to all material conception of darkness. Only he who knows him can transcend the bonds of birth and death. There is no way for liberation other than this knowledge of that Supreme Person. Vedaham etam purusham mahantam. Purusha means a person. Purusha means supreme enjoyer. Person, is it a Purusha? Then, again is described. There is no truth superior to that Supreme Person because he is the supermost. Then his qualities are described. He is smaller than the smallest and he is greater than the greatest. He is situated as a silent tree and he illuminates the transcendental sky as a tree spreads its roots. He spreads his expansive energies. So this is very amazing. These qualities are described of Lord. Inconceivable qualities that we understand that he is not a material person like us. No? Then Krishna goes on explaining that, I mean, we can get a little more into this personal, impersonal if you want. Here, there are some nice quotes. Recommended book for advertisement. 9 o'clock. Okay, we'll just read a little bit and then we'll continue. It's a few nice shlokas about this are given here. See, this is in India all the time we are preaching this, no? Whether God is person or in person. And when you convince him that God is person, then which person he is? Because there are so many demigods also. Eh? So all our preaching lies on that. Here, the question is, in Vedic texts, especially Upanishads, absolute truth is mostly referred to as the Brahman. So why do you say Lord Krishna is the supreme, when absolute truth is that Brahman is supreme, Brahman is supreme? So here the answer goes, yes, it's true that Upanishads mostly use the term Brahman to indicate absolute truth, to elevate reader to the platform of understanding that Supreme Lord's transcendental nature, so that his name, form, qualities and pastimes may not be mistaken as a material. So this is one thing. Why you say Brahman, Brahman, Brahman? Then you understand when you say Rupam, Brahma Rupa, it is not material form. To indicate that this is spiritual form. When you say Brahman, you understand this is, refers to spirit. So whenever the absolute truth is referred to Brahman, you understand it explains his transcendental nature. Nothing related to him, his name, qualities, pastimes, abode, devotees, nothing related to him is material, everything is spiritual. Then, here it's explained that the Mayavadis, they push, no? That Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman, so I am God. Aham Brahmasmi, Brahman means spirit. I am spirit soul. Brahman word is used in Vedas for Jiva, for Paramatma, and for Pradhana also. All three are called Brahman. So whenever is used word Brahman, you have to think to whom it refers. Whether it refers to Jiva or to Bhagavan or to... Why? Because it's energy of the Lord. These are all energies of the Lord. So here, when somebody misunderstands Upanishadic statements regarding Brahman, will certainly lead one to confusion unless one hears from Guru Parampara. For example, famous verse, Aham Brahmasmi. This is from Shweta Kshatriya Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Both they have this shloka. It's generally misunderstood to mean, I am God. The question that naturally follows, if I am God, the absolute truth, the source of everything, the controller of everything, then why am I not able to show any power of God to do something extraordinary or to resist the infallible influence of old age, disease and death? No? So this is the challenge. When somebody misunderstands, I am God, I am Brahma. But Veda says, I am Brahmasmi. Yes, means I am spirit soul. I'm Brahman, I'm not a part of this matter. I'm not materially created life from chemicals. I'm spirit. No, I'm God. Then, God means supreme controller, sustainer. Nobody above you, No? And when ticket controller comes, he is above you. But Krishna says, Mata parataram nanyat kinchit asti. Nothing, nobody is above me. But to speak of insignificant ticket controller. No? So we have to challenge people here. You say you are God, but you show power of God. Do something substantial. No? You are God. And why, where is Shankar Chakragada Padma? Where? If I pull you for the ear, what you can do? Where is your power? No? And you are going to get old and die and get disease. No? So what kind of God you are? And people are so dull, they can't, and they don't want to accept, they don't want to hear. It's obvious. Mad man thinks he is God. Mad fellow thinks he is God. No? Crazy man he thinks he is God. God means, first level, what do you mean God? I'm God. Okay, what is the definition of God? Supreme being. So you are supreme. And then you come home and your wife scolds you. No? Dog bites you. What dog you are? You know, so we have to challenge this, no? So I'm God, everyone is God. It's a relatively easy thing to say. But to act on that platform is impossible for any living entity except God himself or one empowered by him. So here another thing is quoted that from shlokas I quoted from this is from Padma Purana that Vyasadeva addressed Lord Krishna. Vyasadeva speaks to Krishna. O Madhusudana, Krishna, the Upanishads describe you as the Supreme Brahman, the Absolute Truth, and the Creator and Master of the Universe. O Lord, I desire to see you with my own eyes. Please let me see you. It's a prayer of Vyasadeva. Yatat Satyam Param Brahman Jagat Yonim Jagat Patim Vedanti Veda Shiras Chakshusha Natame Sutaha. So, Tvamaham Drashtum Ichami Chakshurbhyam Madhusudana. Madhusudan, you are the one whom Veda called Brahman. This is what Vyasadeva says. And he wrote all the Vedas. Remember that one? No? So, when Veda says Brahman, it refers to the person, Supreme Person. So here again, it's quoted, no? That Vishnu Purana say, Yatra Vatirna Krishna Akyam Param Brahma Narakritihi. That Parabrahman, Krishna, appear in human-like form. Here, the original feature of Supreme Brahman is Krishna in his human-like form. You see that? Krishna, Krishna's form. This is Brahman. This is called Brahman in the Vedas. He is a transcendental form. Though, Narakriti. Narakriti. Nara means a human. In the form of a human, he is. But he is Parabrahman. No? Then again, here it's quoted for Vasudeva Adhyatma that because of qualities of the Lord, Hari are generally unknown, he is said to have no name because his form is not material. He is said to be formless, and because he does nothing in relation to material nature, he is called inactive. No? So here, because qualities are unknown, he is called Nirguna. Because it's difficult to understand his transcendental qualities, Veda says Nirguna. No? Because he is difficult to understand, it is said that he has no name, Arupa. And then he said it is because form is not material, he said that he has no form. Therefore it is said. No? Again, that Nirguna means that material modes, goodness, passion, ignorance, do not stay with him. They cannot stand in front of him. Therefore it's called Nirguna. That no influence of sattva, raja, tamaguna on him. Here, it is the personality of Godhead Lord Hari, whom the Vedas and Smritis describe as having no name, no form, and having nothing to do. This is from Padma Purana. Shloka is written as Anama Rupa Evayam Bhagavan Hari Ishwaraha Karteti Chayo Vedai Smriti Bhicha Vidiyate. Anama Arupa. Evayam. That described as Anama has no name, Arupa has no form, is Bhagavan Hari Ishvara. So clear. Shloka is very, very interesting. Eh? Here, Yosau Nirguna Iti Yukta. Shastra Shri Jagadishvara Prakritai Heya Samyuktai Gunai Hinatvam Uchate. When the Vedic literature describes Supreme Personality of Godhead, the controller of all universe, as being Nirguna, without qualities, it should be understood that that means he has no inferior material qualities. This is from Padma Purana Shloka. No? So Prabhupada says this in the purport. No? When God is described as Nirguna, means he has no material qualities. And then the scholars, they complain, that your Swamiji says like that. No, but this is Shloka from Padma Purana. This is exactly how Vedas deal with it. Nirguna means no material qualities. But then Lord is Guna Dham, abode of all good qualities. We know, we learn from Nectar of Devotion, Krishna has 64 transcendental qualities. He has unlimited qualities, but they are kind of conceived in the categories of 64. Basic qualities, most prominent qualities. No? Krishna has all the qualities. And whatever we have a qualities, this is because Krishna's original qualities are reflected upon us. No? The Shakti comes from Krishna. Whatever Krishna invested his Shaktis in any object, he has a validity, he has a power, because Krishna Shakti is in him. That we'll hear now, text 8 and other things. Rasovamoks, I'm the taste of water. If you put salt in the water, can you drink? No? Ocean water, can you drink? No. Because the salt is not the taste of water. No. This is imposed taste on the water. The original taste of water, that's Krishna. And that gives that particular Shakti quality to the water to quench the thirst. Nobody can drink salty water, for example. So this is explained here. That every quality anybody has. Birth, for example. Now, who is more powerful? Myself or a bird? Well, usually we consider human form is more powerful because more intelligent. But bird can fly. Can I fly? No, I cannot. So bird has given Achintya Shakti, special, inconceivable potency given by Lord to fly. But Lord can fly. Krishna can fly. Without Garuda or with Garuda. Once Garuda there, by the Yoga Maya potency, just to spread the teaching glories of the Lord, he became bewildered. He came to one mountain where rishis were meditating. Yeah? So he sat on the branch where rishis were meditating, they were a little disturbed. They were showing a little disapproval. Hey, we are small valakiyas, you know. And you big bird, you're disturbing our meditation. Huh? I'm carrier of Lord Vishnu. Should be happy. He was a little proud. You should be happy. I sat on your branch. Like that, some conversation took place. By Yoga Maya, by Lord's arrangement. So, then the Rishi said, ah, who are you? What you are carrying? I'm carrying Lord Vishnu. He doesn't go anywhere without me. I carry him to Mandara Mountain. I carry him to the, you know, Sumeru. I carry him upper planetary system, can deal lower planetary system. Wherever he goes, he doesn't go anywhere without me. I carry him only. So that moment Lord Vishnu came, Gurudev, come quickly, take me to Mandara Mountain because devatas are calling, they need the help. Yes, my Lord, please sit on my back. So Lord sat on his back and Garuda started. Nothing, doesn't move for an inch. He's looking left and right, and all the rishis, 60,000 old small varigas rishis looking. You are carrying Vishnu, huh? Pushing. Then go. My Lord, you are carrying me everywhere. I'm not carrying you everywhere. You are only given Shakti, therefore I can do the service. If you withdraw your Shakti, I cannot do any service. So therefore, nobody should be puffed up. Any ability in a man, Paurusham Nishu, you will see later on, Krishna says, any ability in a man comes from me. Krishna withdraws ability, we do mess. We are nothing, zero, we have no Shakti. Therefore, devotees always pray, Lord, let me be instrument in your hand. Empower us that we can do our service. Without your power, we can't chant, we can't hear, we can't control our mind, we can't do anything significant for your service, for your pleasure. All Shakti comes from you. This is the attitude. This is what we have to understand. And this is declared here, that now Krishna is going to explain how he sustains everything, how his substance of everything, how his Shakti makes things valid and capable and able and whatever, you know, that we are going to discuss. So this is good for us to learn, you know, that from Garuda they will learn that who is carrying whom. That's important. Okay, look, we'll stop here. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.